Welcome back to Tasteland. I am Francis Zier.
And I'm Daisy Aliotto.
And today we are speaking with Casey Lewis, who was our very first guest on our fourth episode about a year ago. She's also been a guest on my other podcast, Creator Spotlight. Casey, if you are not somehow familiar with her work, is a youth consumer trends researcher whose newsletter After School is very good. Probably the one and only thing you need to read if you at all are involved in selling things to young people.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I like to know what the youth is up to, and I feel like she's very good at not being condescending to the demographic that reads the newsletter and the demographic that the newsletter is about. I think she shows like a lot of respect for youth culture and the autonomy of like young people kind of making their first financial decisions. And that's always really sat well with me.
Yeah. No, she's very empathetic. It's also just as a newsletter product, I always admire kind of the brevity. Like it's like four or five links and like a paragraph on each. It's very completable. Yeah. I think that's something that I struggle with sometimes in Creator Spotlight is I'm not good at making it completable.
Well, but you're very good at doing the sort of like Axios style takeaways and breaking up the text with headlines and subheadlines, which I feel like I could do a better job with that. Like my default style is long form magazine article.
Yeah, but that's what makes her great too.
Well,
like
I try
to do that for Creator Spotlight because I know we're trying to reach a mass audience that like a lot of people will have less appetite for a long read. Not that it's even that long, like usually like 1,000 to 1,500 words, which to me is not long. But I know to some people it's like, I am not reading all that.
My issue is, and maybe this is specific to me, when the text is broken out with summaries, I tend to skim something that I otherwise might have read all the way through.
Yeah. That's why, well, I try to like, I don't really have the big summaries now. I used to do that a little more, but I try to like with headers and like with bolding of certain items and paragraphs, like I do that to try to like encourage people who might not otherwise read it. Like at least they'll skim through and read a few of the bolded parts. And that's a win. But anyways, tell me about the Greta's new piece that you guys just published. I haven't read it yet, but I've got it open.
Yeah. So I'm actually not somebody who knows a ton about Thomas Bernhardt.
Never read him myself.
For the uninitiated, he's one of Austria's most famous writers. Mm-hmm. He's known for being sort of misanthropic.
You could say he's Austria's second most famous writer.
Right.
That was horrible. I'm sorry.
Wait. Never mind.
Yeah. Don't linger on that.
Anywho. And she was like, yeah, he's having like a renaissance right now. And I was like, oh, I believe you. I always see people tweeting about him or that they're reading him. But because I have never really delved into his work, it didn't really register with me. So I think this is like the perfect blank story because it's the combination of being almost like a social scene report and a sort of an intellectual trend. And like she gets into, you know, his position in the literary culture, you know, his most famous books, recent books that have come out written in his style. So it's a very intelligent piece while still being a little juicy. Mm-hmm. And I made the executive decision to make the cover photo look like a perfectly imperfect.
I got a good laugh out of that. If you heard me chuckle about 30 seconds ago, it's because I looked at it again.
I actually keep laughing at it. I was laughing as I was making it. I think it's the tiny ice cream cone photo perfectly imperfect. Like a lot of people, I think they're like, being perfectly imperfect sort of like gives you a little bit of like a micro celebrity striver thing. Mm-hmm. So I think people unconsciously try to counterbalance it by using like a really chopped photo of themselves. So yeah. I'm kind of like, this is what Thomas Bernhardt would choose for his perfectly imperfect profile to like signal he's not taking it that seriously.
That's good. This reminds me too of like this isn't just these two editorial products, but I see it a lot with Perfectly Imperfect and with Subway Takes, how like you'll get people in the comments saying, oh, why don't you like celebrities again? Like, why don't you just pick like a normal person? And I think I see that more actually with Subway Takes, whereas on Perfectly Imperfect, maybe it's just because I probably don't check the comments as much there. But I feel like people are more, the audience of Perfectly Imperfect is more down to have a celebrity in there than the Subway Takes audience who might get more rankled.
Also, when they're saying normal person, they don't even mean normal person. Like, you might not even know a normal person. I certainly don't.
Well, I know, I don't know if she's a normal person, but Casey Lewis is here, so let's talk to her.
Butter in.
It's great to have you. Did you know that you were our first guest on our fourth episode?
Well, I was actually reflecting on this, and I thought I was maybe the first guest. I didn't want to overinflate it in my brain, the importance, the significance, but up. I did think I was one of the first ones.
You were, and I think at the time you had gotten your dog relatively recently, maybe. How's your puppy?
Was he being crazy in the background?
Well, I think there was like some question of like, was he going to be crazy? But I do remember him being well behaved.
He didn't let the dogs out.
Yeah, they. I have two, and it's like the second they can tell I'm on a Zoom that I need silence for, they decide that that's the moment they want to like roughhouse. And then the second the Zoom concludes, they're like, "Fine."
It's actually kind of uncanny.
What's that?
You always had two dogs, or
so? One is nine, and I've had for 8 years, and then the other I've only had in the last like, well, it's been a year and a half now. It's been a challenge, but worth it.
Yeah.
So, speaking of a year and a half, that's also when a year and a half ago is when I interviewed you for Creator Spotlight, the other podcast. And
yes.
I was looking back at that, and at that time you had 40,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And you have 79,000, maybe it's 80,000 by now. Yeah. I checked last night. So I'd like to congratulate you on doubling that in a year and a half.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Actually, it's funny that you say that, Francis, because that was right before we got the second dog, that trip. Because I don't know if you remember, but we were in
Florida. Airbnb. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that was, we got back and we were getting ready to move. And we were like, why not foster a dog right now? And of course, a year and a half, that foster dog is now firmly our dog. But thank you so much. I don't know. I think you guys would agree where, or maybe you have more like specific metrics in mind for newsletter success. But it's hard for me to know, like, I don't really set goals for myself. Just like every time I hit a new one, I'm like, yay, that like is more than I thought I'd ever have. So I don't know, like in a year and a half, if that's like a met, I mean, you, for instance, you in particular, you talk to people who have crazy growth. But I'm excited.
That's good growth. I mean, that's great. You have like a niche product too, right? Like 80,000 people who want to read about Gen Z trends is pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. I do think youth culture is becoming increasingly mass or like mainstream as an interest.
This is, well, you know, I forget. I think Emily Sundberg wrote a piece about this, or maybe it was you, somebody a couple months ago, of like the people on Instagram commenting like, oh, the market, like the marketing girlies really did their thing, or like marketing, like come on.
Yes.
Which I feel like, to me, I've been saying a lot recently to people that like the new learn to code is learn to do marketing. And like that's the core feature of the creator economy, is it's all marketing. To be a creator is to produce content and market it. And if you are good at like getting a bunch of views, or you get a bunch of engagement, that just means you're good at this specific type of marketing. And so maybe like I'm you know, just putting some things together here, but maybe like increased interest in youth trends is because everybody on the internet, if you are an avid internet user, you are essentially some level of marketer, even if you don't necessarily think of yourself as such, but like you have to understand marketing to understand any social media platform.
Yeah. Emily wrote that piece. I loved it. And actually what you just said made me think of something I hadn't put these two together, but I have been interviewing a bunch of Gen Alphas for a forthcoming report. Okay. And one of them said that they believe that Gen Alpha will be the richest generation of all time because they're so good at marketing themselves. And this, I'm not exaggerating when I say this was like an 11-year-old who said this. So like, a kid having that much of an under, I didn't make the connection that it's all because of the creator economy.
Yeah.
Like that's how they are so aware of marketing as a concept. Like Mr. Beast is nothing if not a master marketer.
Exactly.
So these kids are growing up. Are they going to see an uptick in business school marketing majors because of this like interest?
Well, then it's like, when every Gen Alpha is too good at marketing, like then it, I mean, is it kind of like the learn to code thing where then it comes back to someone else and it's like, it's, I mean, obviously then it becomes a luxury to not have to market yourself. It already is, but.
Yeah. Wow. I guess we'll only know, time will tell. Mm-hmm.
Casey, just to go back to the growth over the last year and a half, are there particular moments of inflection where you saw an influx of people, like doing work with other people who are joining Substack, like American Eagle? Did that ultimately like drive people to your platform as well?
That's a great question. In the 4.5-ish years that I've been doing the newsletter, there have been moments, but not really when you would think. Like early on, my first big bump was when the Of A Kind girls, Claire and Erica, now they do 831, they plugged me in their newsletter. And I don't know, they must have sent like 1,000 subscribers. Like I knew they were influential and amazing, but I didn't quite realize how much power they had. Yeah. And so it's always those like less expected moments. I think American Eagle was good in that Craig Brommers, the CMO, mentioned me in a couple of press interviews. So then I would see like an uptick from a lot of like marketing and ad people. But I would say a lot of marketing and ad people who would read my name in Adweek or AdAge, and I mean this in like not in a like conceited way, but like most of them already were reading the newsletter just because it's like one of the few sort of like youth. So I don't know. I actually should go back and see if there was an uptick there. I will say historically the biggest moments for growth have been the Christmas hauls. So when I watch like 1,000 back to school Christmas hauls of teens, you know, I got this, I got this. And then similarly back to school hauls. And so
that's just happened.
Yeah, just happened. And I also doubled down on back to school this year where I did. I noticed that so many girls were sharing their first day outfits. And so I watched a bunch of like first day OOTDs to see like what are people actually wearing.
Well, tell us all about that.
Do you want to hear first what they wore for the first day or what they were buying for back to school?
Was there an overlap? Like, was there something that showed up in the big buys that a lot of people were like, this is my first day thing?
Yeah, definitely an overlap. So the most interesting thing probably for both pieces was how much it is about denim this year. And in the years I've been writing this newsletter, you know, coming out of COVID, it was all girls were wearing the baggy sweats. Well, first it was the leggings, and then it turned into the flare leggings, and then it was the baggy sweats. And then last year, people started to dabble in denim, but it was still sort of like a baggy cargo. And I think it was just people getting, you know, it was an evolution.
Perfect timing to do, for example, a Gap partnership based around denim.
Exactly. But you know, I will say I started chatting with Gap like before I knew that it was going to be like such a big denim moment. And obviously, like if you go back to like teen magazines, like denim is always a huge thing for back to school. You know, they're always like pushing that. But I think COVID really, it hurt the denim category because we weren't used to wearing quote unquote hard pants even as adults. But in many cases, these tweens, like, they'd never worn hard pants. So it was like discovering denim for the first time. But girls were buying like so six like piles of denim, the vast majority being like low-rise baggy, which is, you know, less of a far bridge from the baggy sweats than like a skinny or a flare. But you would see like some of the low-rise flares that, you know, the very Y2K. And then go ahead.
No, this is just a self-serving anecdote. I don't think I wore denim until eighth grade, and I could not stand it. I could not put it on my body.
Sensorily, denim isn't great. And then you sort of get used to it, I think, at a certain point. But I, you know, especially with kids, like there's a reason why six-year-olds aren't necessarily wearing denim to school every day. And then for tops, the most viral back-to-school top, Y2K adjacent, was this Hollister baby doll top, which Daisy, you probably recall this being the first iteration of this.
I think you're a little younger than me. Some version of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's all like mashed together in my mind. Like I'm trying to picture it in my mind. I know I didn't have an Abercrombie one. I'm like, did I have a Hollister or American Eagle? Was it an eagle on it or a seagull? Like
yeah. But you know, Hollister and a lot of these companies have done like sort of throwback reissue collaborations or campaigns this year. And so there were a bunch of memes around this specific Hollister baby doll top And then it was, in fact, one of the most worn first day of school tops. Mm.
Is this the knit one? Is it knit? Like acrylic ribbed knit?
I can, not really. Okay. There's a couple of iterations of it because one thing that Hollister does is when they release something that's pop, you have to pay attention to their like distribution and how they, like, once they release something that seems popular, they then like introduce all these small variations on it. So it's like, it's really fascinating because I think when we were younger, they didn't have the infrastructure to act. I mean, did anyone like,
it's like, I think a thing as such.
It's the Shein model, right? Where it's like, this thing is popular, therefore we're going to introduce it in a bunch of different colorways. But the Hollister Baby Doll top was specifically mostly in maroon, a maroon colorway or a navy colorway and polka dots and like the satin little band right under the bust. And it did come in like florals and stuff like that too. But the polka dots were like far and away the most popular.
So interesting. I also didn't wear a lot of jeans until high school, but I went to a charter school growing up that was like, the dress code was no jeans.
Listener, she's wearing a denim jacket right now.
But. Well, I'm going to get into that. So then I got to high school and I was like, jeans. But I've never been a big pants girl. Like, I don't know why. I don't get super excited by jeans, but coincidentally, last weekend, I bought jeans for the first time in, honestly, I think years. Like, I went to Old Navy and I was like, I have been sort of coasting off of the fact that I save my jeans forever. So I have some like vintage boot cut, straight leg J. Crew from straight leg era that go into the tall boots. And then some like Free People flares that I bought in maybe like 2015. But I was like, I'm missing some of these like wide straight styles. Mm-hmm. So let me go to Old Navy and just get like one of the trendier cuts. And I'm an adult. Like, I could literally buy any jeans that I want. Like, I could have bought four pairs if I wanted to. And I walked in and I was kind of like,
okay, stop flexing.
Okay. Well, like, we're adults, right? Like, I think part of the back to school excitement when you're younger is there's this like imposed austerity, right? Or there used to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what will my mom let me buy? And so you're in this like weird, Casey, like maybe more so between mothers and daughters, you're in this weird like negotiation with them where if you try something on and your mom really likes it, and then it's like, oh, I'm gonna get this in multiple colors. And so you're like trying to like get them to buy into the stuff that you want. So I don't do a lot of shopping because I have a startup, like I'm kind of on like de facto no buy for myself. In general. And so it was weird to like go shopping for the first time, be like, I'm going to shop, I'm going to buy whatever I want. And then just be like, I don't know, I guess like one pair. But then I did buy this jean jacket as well, which is like kind of more of the like, it's almost cut like a bomber jacket, but it buttons up the front. And I know this is kind of trendy because I've seen girls on TikTok wearing this kind of style of denim jacket. But it's interesting to me. And then I was like, you know what? I might just not be a person who's excited by denim. And like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I've been hearing good things about Old Navy's jeans for fall. I've not tried them yet. But I'm curious what made you, why Old Navy? Like, what was that? It just seemed easy.
It's near my house. Like, I don't know.
Desire path.
Yeah, it really was kind of a desire path situation. If it hadn't been Old Navy, maybe Gap. I think, I don't know. Yeah, okay, probably.
So you got to start somewhere. Yeah.
Something I want to bring back around to, back to the back to school halls. The people, so besides like the trends, the clothes, et cetera, like are these people where now like you've seen some of these kids like over a couple different years of posting their hauls, like who are these people that you're sourcing this information from?
Yeah, I would say that does happen. Like this year, I saw a couple of girls and I thought, man, they look so familiar. And then I'd look back and they'd have viral hauls from previous years. But what the most interesting thing about people who share hauls, specifically back to school, Christmas, these big events, it's not people who are necessarily who would self-identify as creators or even as aspiring creators. And a lot of girls would give, you know, little, you know, a note at the beginning that's like, if any of my classmates come across this, know that I'm not trying to be an influencer. I just like watching hauls. And if you, you know, if you see this, then no, you didn't kind of thing.
Wow.
And which is so interesting. Like as someone who created content as a teen and didn't tell my classmates and then was like mortified when they found like my blog. I related to this in a visceral way. But I do think, you know, there is this interesting push pull with TikTok in particular, a feeling that you could go viral overnight and change your life, but also this sort of like embarrassing moment before it happens where you're just creating content.
You're just a striver.
Exactly. But I think hauls get a pass because they are such a sort of thing. Yeah. But I would say, you know, it's a lot of just kids who want to share the cool stuff that they got.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. This is more of a meta question about youth culture right now. And it's something that I think about as somebody who has a media company that's a little bit more purposely a little bit on the fringe of culture. But I think last time we talked, we were talking about like this aspiration to normality, where if you look at the things that people are buying, it's like they want to signal that they are part of the mainstream. And youth culture has gone through periods though, where like signaling that you're not part of the mainstream might be the dominant posture towards shopping or finding things, where it's like, I want something that nobody else has, not I want something because everyone has it. And I was talking to Sebastian, who runs this book imprint called Isolari, which is like those tiny, have you seen them? They're like tiny pocket-sized books by different authors. I think you would recognize it if you saw it. But
okay,
we were talking about, he's in Europe, and he was talking about the renationalization of youth culture, where youth culture is retreating from the internet and becoming more... embracing the sort of subcultures of geographical pockets in a way that wasn't really the case when youth were like really optimistic about being online, like in our generation. And so I was curious, like, it seems like youth culture right now is like pretty legible because people are like externalizing, like, this is what I bought. Like, these are my hauls. And people are willing to go out and just buy exactly what somebody else has. But I wonder if you think the pendulum might swing back to being like a little bit illegible, where it's like youth culture is harder to discern because, you know, people are retreating from the internet or being purposely sort of like fringe, confusing, edgy, not easier for an advertiser to just like easily capture.
So my thought on this is that the Gen Zers who are, you know, maybe seniors in college or graduating, and they're experimenting with style in a little bit in ways that you aren't when you're a teen. I think being a teenager, whether we're talking Gen Z, Gen Alpha, you know, the younger, elder Gen Alphas.
It's like they're like 14, us, right?
Yeah. I think maybe the oldest are turning 15 now. So Okay. We're talking, you know, freshmen in high school. But I think about even us as teens, and I'm from a small town in Missouri, and there was very little individuality, and the kids wanted to keep it that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like they looked down upon any sort of individuality whatsoever. And I was obsessed with fashion magazines, and I would go to thrift stores and like find things that I felt like a Tusa Rubinstein from Cosmo girl would wear, you know, like kitten heels. And then I can't remember if I've told you guys this before, but I like, if I wore them to school, then people would be like, why are you dressed up? Mm-hmm. And you'd feel like an idiot and like you were trying to be different and, oh, I'm not going to do that again. I think many of those, you know, feelings or pressures still exist in high schools. And now it's perhaps even worse because there's such a sameness because of TikTok. So talking to my mom who teaches in rural Missouri still, like so many of the same trends are happening there as, you know, I see on teens in Brooklyn. Now, I do think like some schools in Brooklyn have more individuality, and not just Brooklyn, but like other places too. You know, it's rural Missouri is like one very specific example. But I do think, Daisy, to your point, like once you get either to college or out of college, you feel like you can try on different identities in a way that it won't ruin your social standing at your small,
especially like in freshman year of college, where everybody's kind of getting their footing and like figuring out who each other is.
Totally. Although, you know, I went to University of Missouri and I felt like many of the same pressures that I did in high school because it is has such a big, you know, Greek life and it, like very much a pressure to conform. And I, if you've watched any Rush Talk TikToks, I think that they're, you know, you see it there too, where it's like they want to have the cutest dress from a specific brand, but it needs to be the right brand. So it's like, there is a search of like, I want to find the coolest version of X, but it needs to be within these, you know, very specific, you know, I need to stay within this box, but within this box, I can like flex my, you know, it can be pink instead of green.
I feel like my equivalent of that, at, you know, small liberal arts college in Portland, Oregon was like, everyone got Doc Martens. And then I, of course, was like, well, I'm never, ever going to wear a pair of Doc Martens. Like, I'm going to rebel against this. Like, this is, or Blundstones were the other ones, but really Doc Martens. Freshman year of college in Portland, Oregon, everyone bought Doc Martens.
Were they the boots or the shoes? And were they black or brown?
There was variability, but probably the average one was the was a black boot.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, you know, I remember also going to like the Vince Staples show put on by Doc Martens in downtown Portland. So it's like the Doc Martens industrial complex runs deep there.
And have you still not worn Doc Martens to this day?
I never will. I never will.
That's so funny.
Maybe Solaver, which is like the that's the factory that used to make Doc Martens, and they're basically dupes, but like they look a little bit, they don't have the yellow. Yeah. That was my
It's funny these things that leave like, you know, imprints on us.
I'm not trying to make it that deep, but I also think from my perspective, there's something about conservatism that discourages individuality. And I wonder if there's something in the country taking a more conservative turn at the leadership level that somehow trickles down into people's perspective towards standing out.
Specifically like teenagers style. Yeah. Well, I wonder, actually, Casey, like over the years you've been cataloging these back to school halls and stuff, were there any departures this year from a previous year or something like that? Like on the meta level over the past 4 or 5 years, have there been like major changes?
Wait, and to ride along on that, do you see any recessionary indicators in what people are buying?
So no, definitely not. Okay. I expected to see in the halls like some acknowledgement of what is happening, even like just knowing that few teens had jobs this year. You know, it was very hard for summer jobs, and knowing what their parents must be dealing with. Like I expected to see some sort of like, you know, I did not see any of that at all. And if anything, I was surprised by how much labels seemed to matter. Because there is this idea that Gen Z and teens specifically are, you know, so dupe curious and, you know, who needs a Lululemon backpack when you could get a backpack that looks just like it from Amazon for a fraction of the price. But like, it very much matters to have these very specific items.
Otherwise, you're going to go to school, kids are going to make fun of you, and you're going to cry because you didn't have Lululemon.
Seriously. I mean, exactly. But like, yeah. I kind of had this, I was totally, you know, this was a wrong sort of guess of how things were going with the, you know, the rise of dupes. But I had this idea that like, there was maybe respect around like, oh, you don't have the Stanley. I mean, Stanleys are out now, but you don't have the Stanley, but you have the, you know, it's Stanley dupe from TJ Maxx. And like, in fact, that's a flex because you have the same thing, except you didn't spend all this money on it, but you were able to like source it. But that's not the case at all. It's like, and I had a couple in my conversations with tweens for this report, I had a couple of kids like sort of explain the nuances of dupes, where it kind of seems like, you know, if you can find a bronzer dupe that looks the same, but it's not as visible of a dupe as if you're wearing fake Lulu leggings or, you know, something like that.
Is there like,
yeah,
this... I know the like Labubu's bag charms, the Purell that's basically a keychain, the water bottle charms. Like, I've kind of wondered if that's sort of like a lipstick indicator thing where it's like, well, it's cheaper to buy a bag charm for your existing Coach bag than a new Coach bag. Like, is that sort of like the consumer trend for accessorizing something that already exists? Like, is that continuing? And are there more extreme examples of this happening?
So it didn't come up much in the back to school halls. It was mostly people walking through their bigger purchases, backpacks included. And I was actually surprised how few bag terms came up when people were talking about their backpacks. The Touchland hand sanitizer, I think is what you're talking about. It was mentioned a bunch. It's the like it girl hand sanitizer, as absurd as that, as those words together are. But in the last couple of weeks, a bunch of girls have been going viral for sharing their how to build your dream keychain, which involves a Lululemon keychain that has like a little pouch on it. And then girls are like adding all kinds of charms to those, which I definitely think is like, you know, it's the whole like trinket core thing where it's like Lububu's on Hermes bags. And I think that people are just like trying to figure out how to express themselves in ways big and small. And it feels good to buy something cute and tiny that won't, you know, break the bank or take all of your allowance. Kids don't really get allowances these days for the most part, but you know what I mean.
I honestly think if I had asked for a new backpack every school year growing up, my mom would have been like, what is wrong with you? Like, what? There is a core fundamental understanding in our family that if your L.L. Bean backpack broke, you could take it back to L.L. Bean and they would give you a new one. And for that reason, like, not only were you not getting a new backpack every
year.
New
England.
Unless you really needed one. Like, well, L.L. Bean kind of had to phase that out because people were abusing it. They were bringing in like 30-year-old pants, you know, which fair play. But, you know, if the zipper on your L.L. Bean backpack broke and it had only been like a couple years, you know, go get a new version from LL Bean. It's
or
funny
replace
to me.
The zipper.
Totally.
Nobody knows. And like, nobody replaces anything. That's
like, I can't remember if I've ranted on this podcast before. I feel like Francis is probably tracking my like not even slow. Like
there's like okay, we were gonna say, there's like two things you're gonna say.
I have been rapid cycling back into being a traditional like prep wasp because I'm so offended by the crassness of consumerism. And I don't mean like sweet teenage girls showing off what they bought. I mean like not sweet 40-year-olds showing off what they bought. and then like telling women to just stay home and be a housewife. But
like what? Give us examples of what these 40-year-olds are buying. These mysterious 40-year-olds.
Like everything. I don't know. I'm kind of forgetting what my original point was though.
LL
Bean backpack, wasps. I don't know. Just like general thriftiness was more of a thing.
And now, Daisy, are you saying that you're seeing like overconsumption among both, like among 40-year-olds as well as teens? Is that what you're saying?
I think everyone overconsumes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Stanley Tumblr thing was, you know, so much attached to teens, at least as far as headlines go. But it started with women. Like it started with moms, and I do think. You know, I don't want to come for moms, but I do think moms tend to consume a lot because they are bullied by their tweens to buy certain things. And also, Daisy, what you said about, you know, when you're going back to school shopping and, you know, you kind of have to sell your mom on some of these items in order to get them excited. And maybe you could get it in two washes instead of one. That really spoke to me because when I distinctly remember going back to school shopping, I'm not just saying this because of the very small Gap partnership I had around the long and leans, but I was obsessed with long and lean jeans and I sold my mom on them too. And so we went home with like four pairs between us because I was able to successfully sell her on this trend. She looked great in them. It's not like she was like, you know, the mean girl's mom trying to like look cool. But I, you know, I, what you said like speaks to something that I hadn't thought about a lot where it's like, the relationship between mother and daughter shopping and buying, like a lot of negotiation goes into it.
Yeah, I think I actually remembered what I was going to say. It was about like two specific brands that were in my household growing up. As somebody who had a mom who didn't do a lot of shopping, Vera Bradley and, you know, the L.L. Bean boat tote. And two things about those is like, yes, they would introduce new patterns and new versions every year, but like whether to buy that was not like, it wasn't a given that you would then buy that. These were things that you were supposed to keep forever. And so like, I just don't think you're supposed to have like five LL Bean boat totes. Like I have the one that I inherited from my grandmother, and I have the one that I would put my Bible in at summer camp. And it's been funny to watch like the rugby shirt come into fashion too, because the one that I wear was my high school field hockey team's rugby shirt, and it still has my last name on the back, and it's starting to peel off. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I've been thinking about writing it a little bit. Like Instagram, like early Instagram was 100% like people doing, like showing off their fashion, right? But a lot of the photos that were like influencer styling photos on Instagram and Tumblr, they would show like one part of the outfit. So somebody would take a picture from like up here. You guys can't see me gesturing, but you know, like the top down shoe shot is a very millennial thing.
Well, this is because the photo quality was so much worse too, right?
I think so. Yeah. That's an interesting theory.
And it was square. You couldn't do non-square photos. I don't even know when they allowed you to do non-square photos.
Or like if you were holding a beverage, you could see like the bracelet somebody was wearing. But now like on TikTok, like you always show the whole outfit, because if you don't show the whole outfit, people will just be like, well, what else are you wearing with those shoes? Like if you don't list it out, you're gatekeeping. And for that reason, it's like everyone, it's not the quality of the photos. It's like everyone is overstyled because you see everything all at once. You don't fill in any of the vision. Like a lot of times there's not really a sense of like context of the environment that this will be worn in, and the clothes don't look worn. And so I'll see somebody and it'll be like a beautiful girl, and she'll be wearing like a Yankees, like Letterman baseball jacket or something when that was like popular or something like that. And it's like, why would you have that? Like there's kind of no alibi for like why people have what they have other than it's on trend and it all looks good. But I'm kind of like, it's become uncanny valley. And there was already so much uncanny valley happening, but now to me, it's that everyone's wardrobe looks like a rental.
Yeah. And often is because of places like Nuuly. But I think you're totally right. And what I think about too, Daisy, when you see girls like that, where, you know, you're wearing like the on-trend Yankee jacket in the photo and you get the Instagram and you get the TikTok of it, then you're literally never wearing it again. And I know this is not new. Like we all know this is the way it works, but it's so depressing.
I think there's something about it that is new though. And I'm having trouble putting my finger on it. Maybe you and I could like text after this. Cause like something about, like there's fast fashion into the ability to rent fast fashion obviously accelerated it. But like when we were growing up, you wouldn't buy a new outfit for a special occasion unless maybe it was like your birthday. And now I feel like there's way bigger culture around like a new outfit, like completely new top to bottom outfit for an event. And I do think that changes people's relationship to their clothes, because renting is actually really thrifty and sustainable. And I support it a lot. It's the like losing the sort of patina of like the off-duty model Olsen twins walking around with their Starbucks, like hole in your sweater, crease in your shoes, like something gets lost there.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree.
And I don't even think it's coming from celebrities anymore, because celebrities do rewear their clothes. We know from the paparazzi.
On a similar thread here, going back to what you were saying about your friend who runs Isolari and like the refragmentation of youth culture, can you say more on that? Like, was that a discussion?
Yeah. So the example he gave me was eco grunge in Italy. And I was like, say more. Like, I want to know everything about this. And we didn't get into it too much because he's like me and his mind is just like, no, we were like, I want to do this and this and this. One of those conversations. But I was like, I assumed you're telling the truth because I haven't seen anything about this online. And so if you say like Italian youth are doing like pockets of eco grunge, like I believe you. And I think like, well, sorry, I don't want to get political again, but like there's something about youth culture and protest culture that go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
And so if you have pockets in Europe or even the United States where like those two things are more correlated, I think it changes like people's relationship to fashion by like their values. Like I assume if somebody says
because
eco grunge in Italy
and rejection.
Well, I assume like if you say eco grunge in Italy, I assume this is like a young person involved in like environmental protests. Mm-hmm. And what are the like fashion signifiers that go along with that? But if somebody's like reference for fashion is the ability to externalize it online and meet like-minded fashionistas on TikTok that they're basically like using like their Teen Vogue, that person's going to look a lot different. Like, you know, Casey, I also read magazines growing up, and like, I feel like I found your work through your ability to like historicize Teen Vogue. Like, that was the first time I kind of became aware of you and your thinking. And like, we didn't really have a way to talk to other Teen Vogue readers. The perspective of other readers was kind of being like channeled through each issue and like to us.
Yeah.
And so that like community of Teen Vogue readers was like a community at Remove, almost talking to each other through the magazine, or assuming they were talking to each other through the magazine.
Yeah.
And that's very different from the peer-to-peer exchange intermediated by an algorithm. And so if more of these like renationalization of youth culture is trends that arise and like people in the same place doing things together geographically, whether it's like protesting or just doing like Dungeons and Dragons, like that's really cool. And it might like not be externalized on the internet for like a long time or ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought about Teen Vogue in that, in, or any magazine in that way, and how there was a lack of community because there were just no spaces that we could exist in the mailbag page on in every magazine.
Or when they would be like, this is a real girl. Like, you wrote for us. Like, those were Nepo babies. Or like Gia Tolentino. Like, when I found out Gia Tolentino was like one of like the real girl girls, I was like, what? Like, I'm sorry, a disproportionate amount of those people are now famous.
It is actually crazy, especially the like Vogue, Teen Vogue era, you know, those early days, you know, Lena Dunham, like that first time I ever saw her face was in a Teen Vogue. But
we believed that they were real girls, and that's the belief is like what mattered.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. I mean, they were real.
They are real people. They're real. I don't need a Dunham truther. I don't think that she exists.
Sorry, the real thing, I just saw someone, a TikTok went viral where a girl was like, you know, in this Ozempic era, like, I'm so sick of no longer seeing real bodies anywhere. And then there were all these comments that were like, thin bodies are real bodies too.
Thin bodies are real. Thin bodies are real. I saw this TikTok last night that was like, first of all, I don't watch a lot of TikTok right now. I am though, because I got locked out of my Netflix because we share with my husband's parents and we haven't like, they implemented the like one Wi-Fi network. So I was watching Gilmore Girls as my like brainless wind down show. And then I got locked out of Netflix. And so I've been watching TikTok, which is not good. I went to my husband. I was like, you have to fix it.
You gotta
so
sort
I stopped watching TikTok last
my
night.
Sanity.
This girl was like, I'm going to Kellogg Diner from the show Girls. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. And then, so I'm like sliding through. I'm like, that's so victimless crime. Then I get to like the fourth slide and I was like, is that my ex-boyfriend? And I literally like screenshot it and was like, we'll address this later. So not only did I see a TikTok of a girl saying she was going Kellogg Diner from the show Girls, there was also like a man in the far background that I was like, is that my ex-boyfriend? And I think that really captures the experience of being on TikTok in New York.
Yes. I thought you meant she was on a date with him, so I'm glad that that's not the case. He was just in the background.
I don't think so. No, I don't think she was on a date, but actually I don't know.
I won't investigate it.
I might just remember it like 7 days from now and send a photo to my
friend. Delete the screenshot from your phone. I'm not really on TikTok. I successfully stopped using TikTok about 4 years ago.
He's four years clean.
No, it's probably 3 years, maybe two.
But you replaced it with Reels, which I don't think really.
It does not count. At the beginning, it was way better because Reels wasn't as good and it wasn't as addictive. And now, you know, I probably scroll a couple hours of Reels a day. But I bring this all up to say,
Wait, so you're watching Reels like I watch TikTok. So you're not clean and sober.
No, I'm
yeah,
not.
That's
being like, oh, I'm addicted. I'm not addicted to fentanyl anymore. I'm on.
This is like, no, this is like in college when I was like, I'm going to stop smoking weed. And I just started smoking more cigarettes. The TikTok sale thing. I've read a little bit about this, but I have a feeling that both of you may be more informed on this than me. What is going on here?
Basically, oh, TikTok shop?
Will they, won't they? No. The sale. Like to the Ellison, the Oracle, A16Z, all this. What's going on? Is this actually happening?
Yeah, probably. Like if the government wants it to happen, it'll happen.
I have to say, I have not been keeping up. I after feeling so emotionally invested in the outcome in January.
Oh my God, yeah.
I just can't, like, I'm seeing these headlines. I refuse to click on them. I have started to see a couple of TikToks that are like, you know, this TikTok sale actually is happening and it's going to ruin your algorithm because of, but I refuse to get involved and until we actually know. And
yeah,
there's just so much happening politically that it's like, this is not going to be a source of stress for me.
Yeah.
I've actually been scrolling Twitter less the past couple of weeks because it's finally kind of just breaking me a little bit.
Oh, I destroyed my algorithm. I destroyed it, and then I was sort of leaning into it, and I was like, okay, Candace Owen conspiracy theory. Let's just look and see what this is. But then it's like, that's my whole algorithm now. And I've like destroyed my algorithm in the past and like undestroyed it because, you know, Twitter used to be like not as sensitive, but TikTok's always been sensitive. So like if you watch one tarot reader all the way through, top to bottom tarot readers, but you know how to like get yourself out of that.
Yeah.
Twitter has become so sensitive that like,
it's really hard to change it.
Right. Like if you like one corny horoscope thing as a joke, it's like top to bottom tweets about zodiac signs. And so I kind of like accidentally like QAnon'd my timeline. And because I log in to the dirt Twitter from my same device, it's like both of them, they're like correlated. So anyway, I think, I don't know why I'm on there really. I'm seeing like a lot of bad stuff. And now I'm just like, I guess I have to look at the bad stuff since I'm here.
Or you could just scroll LinkedIn.
That's
what I do.
That's a different breed of bad stuff.
Yeah.
Somebody, or worse, the Substack app.
Oh my God. That one I don't do. Did you see
Victoria's, I can't remember her last name, but I know that she's a trend forecaster.
The Nike girl.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Victoria from Nike.
Victoria Futures. Shout out to Victoria Futures is her handle.
Yeah. So she tweeted like, do people understand that we can tell that these comments are AI? And she screenshotted LinkedIn comments that were like, such a good point. I feel like this is really important. And I was like, I think that they can tell. I think that they're leaning into the signifier that having commented is more important than what is in the comment. And so it's like comment slop. Like somebody published a piece.
I'm getting so over blank slop, blank slop.
Yeah.
Debate slop, comment slop.
We were going to call today's dirt Bernard maxing. And I nixed that because I was like, we've maxed enough. We've slopped enough.
Are you tired of slop as like seeing that word around, or you're tired of it as a constant?
All of the above, Casey.
All of the above, but specifically, I think the word, like it's
word.
I feel like I've become so sensitive to like these words that become like for like 1 or 2 months, like so maxi. Hot. But as soon as I see it 3 times, I just start checking out, and I start like, I don't think I've muted slop on Twitter, but I have a lot of like recent like hot words muted on Twitter where I'm just like, I don't need to participate in this trend.
What's the next one?
I don't need to read this. What's the next one?
Core slop.
My mom was visiting this weekend, you guys, and she teaches a lot of Gen Alpha. And so she was telling me about some Gen Alpha lingo.
Oh, 67.
Yeah, 67.
I don't know.
I think we're past peak 667.
Yeah.
It's
I figured if I knew about it, we're past peak.
And like my mom, I love her, but she's also a 68. She was like,
"It's too bad that
I'm not 67." but she, you know, she's a 68-year-old woman, so she is educating me. But I'm also sort of like, okay, I'm taking it with a grain of salt, just because like she doesn't have like the nuances, nor do I. But you know, it's just she's not a Gen Alpha explaining this to me. She's a 68-year-old woman explaining Gen Alpha to me. So 67, she said, is on its way out though. And in its place, well, everyone's going around talking about, so I made a note. I gotta fact check myself here. You stole my brain rot. So we like all know brain rot, obviously, but do you know this phrase? You stole my brain rot?
No.
So it's a Roblox game, and it has then turned into like a catchphrase. There's probably Gen Alpha parents listening right now who are like, that's actually like an incorrect read on it. But it's like, it's gone from Roblox to it's descended roadblocks to the hallways of school. And it just, you know, like so many things, like 6-7, it really is meaningless. It just indicates that you are in
that
on
you
it.
Know. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, and I think that's with so many things where it's like you're just telling people. I mean, I'm sure Daisy has seen this because she spends time on TikTok, but like the I know ball meme.
Oh, I know yeah. that because I watch soccer and I'm on soccer Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I just saw the first time I saw that, I saw like somebody use that on LinkedIn. I'm like, how this is clearly far away from like she knows ball, you know, like
those things should not be on LinkedIn.
I'm gonna get off of this, guys. Solemnly swear, as soon as I get off of this, I'm gonna make my LinkedIn status "you stole my brain rot." Just okay,
I'm gonna reveal a few of the words I currently have muted, and I delete these over time, and they're all muted okay. just for people I don't follow. Renaissance painting, that one's been yeah. for a while. Bingo card.
Mm,
Labubu.
Great one.
And most recently, protein.
Well, yeah.
I just didn't need to see. Oh, sorry.
Was there a trend around bingo card, or were you just tired of people saying that's not on my bingo card?
I was tired of that. I was just like, I don't care. It wasn't on your bingo card. I just don't ever need to see anybody say this again. I will exclusively reveal, please don't Google this, that when I was the opinions editor of the high school newspaper, I wrote, it's so bad. I went back, I'm like, God, I'm such an asshole. I wrote a piece about like how I was tired of like cell phone speak, you know, taking over how people wrote on the internet or something.
What a crank.
It's really kind of, it's, yeah, very crank and like really like, God, I'm
you've always been insufferable.
I've always been insufferable. Mm-hmm. I'm actually less insufferable than I used to be, which is saying a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty insufferable yeah. myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Voted okay. most likely to succeed.
Most likely to succeed. I have no idea what I was voted. Casey, I want you to, I've read your writing about this, but for the listener who has never heard of Salish matter, I would love for you to spill a little.
Oh my gosh. This girl has occupied my thoughts for the last 2 weeks. And I don't want to be, well, do you want me to give the like 2 second?
So what I know is she is yeah. a 14-year-old, 15-year-old TikTok creator yeah. who, that's all. And she had a Sephora collaboration come out where 80,000 people went to the Mall of America. This is all I know.
Yeah. So yeah, I had a couple of people send me, there were a few headlines when Sephora made the announcement that they were, starting a line with this girl, this 15-year-old influencer. And I'd never heard the name, which like, you know, there's so many influencers, like it's not like
industry plant,
but you know, I wasn't like, how have I never heard this name in my life? But I was like, I need to know more about this girl. Like, this is fascinating. And then I tried to watch some of her videos, but forgive me, but it's kindergartner slop. It's truly like Mr. Beast content for an 8-year-old girl. And the worst part about this is, and I feel a little
I love
bit
the broken
like,
social scene.
I feel a little bit like old person shaking my fist at this, but mm-hmm. the demented thing about it is most of the content lives on her dad's channel. And her dad publishes content that's like, my daughter's first kiss. And it's like, but then it's edited to be like Mr. Beast-ish. So like the optimized crazy thumbnails and the crazy editing and the, like, it's literally for 7-year-olds.
History will not look kindly on this.
And did Sephora not do like the tiniest bit of like due diligence into this? Like, did they just see 15-year-old influencer has this much reach? Let's go. Like it. And so then if you'll look at the TikToks or the reels from this, you know, the 80,000 kids showed up, like we're talking kids, we're talking like kids. And so I saw a haul and a girl was like, and this is, well, I actually don't know how to read. Mom, what is this?
No,
and these are beauty hauls. And so it's just, it got me thinking like the, you know, influencers sell stuff. Like they do. They sell stuff. And like, she's by no means the first child influencer. Like there's the kid who like does the toy. I mean, there's probably millions of kids yeah. who are now like toy influencers. Like that, yeah. that is the reality that we live in. But there's something a little bit icky about not just the dad engineering all of this, but also the fact that it's like they're beauty products. Like it's skincare, but it's like we're selling a $20 moisturizer to a 7-year-old who wants this because she wants to have beautiful skin. It's just so crazy. So,
well, it's like the simultaneous infantilization of grown-up female celebrities and then like the accelerated like grown-upness of the genuinely young ones. And like I think the internet, like people have said, like part of the problem of the internet is it's just dumps all of the age groups onto the same platforms. Whereas like growing up, it's like if you're watching Disney Channel, you're watching Disney Channel, and most likely adults are not, and if they are, they aren't discussing it with you except for maybe on internet forums that neither of you should be on, and everyone knew that was bad. And now like, and they were saying it was bad at the time, but you have like, on one hand, I'm 17 and I'm afraid of Sabrina Carpenter, who like, that is a grown ass woman doing whatever the fuck she wants. And then you have like 12-year-olds. And actually, I think I'd be interested to hear in your perspective. I think celebrities have become more conscious of not prematurely aging their children in the public spotlight. There's still like a little bit of that, but like, I would say, it seems like Beyonce and Jay-Z. Beyonce and Jay-Z. That's amazing Freudian slip. And the Kardashians are actually like consciously trying to avoid their kids falling into this trap where it's like, okay, we can't entirely keep them out of the spotlight, but if I'm going to do makeup with my child, they're clearly using it in a very kind of childlike way, which isn't entirely avoiding the problem, but it seems like it's not, it's like this girl's dad. It's not like the most famous celebrities that are doing this with their kids. It's people who aspire to celebrity and are kind of like not celebrity people. And so they're kind of leveraging their children in this way that becomes like super inappropriate.
Yeah. It's like tech, like, you know, Silicon Valley tech CEOs who don't let their kids on technology, you know, have any devices. Yeah. It's like, although I will say, in my deep dive into this girl and her dad, Khloe Kardashian's kids are noted fans of her. And so they had sent, I went so deep into Reddit on this, but the Salish and her father had sent like some sort of care package or a signed autograph or something to Khloe's kids. I'm not sure how old Khloe's kids are. I'm not sure if that is like questionably, you know, appropriate age wise, but yeah, I mean, it's tough.
They're seven and three, according to
this. Okay, so exactly like that. That just goes to show like what age group is into what this girl is making, which then makes the fact that she has a skincare company or brand sold at Sephora all the more confounding. It's like, 3-year-olds don't need skincare.
No, this is not like Candy Cane Bath and Body Works, which was like, you know.
Exactly. And that gets a pass.
Yeah, we were buying like Lip Smackers glitter packs. And I was like, this is my makeup.
Exactly. Like, and I played in my mom's makeup, but it was play.
Yeah.
I was buying RuneScape paid subscriptions.
Is that
in your closet,
game?
Literally?
Yeah,
in closet.
It was. It's like a World of Warcraft precursor. Then I started playing World of Warcraft, which is 3 times more expensive per month, or was then.
So yeah, I mean, maybe that's the point. Maybe these are all just, you know, it's a variation on what used to be. The, you know, it's just consumers and corporations are so much more sophisticated now in how they market. And you know, Sephora wasn't everywhere when I was a kid. Like the only makeup I had access to, or that I could even try on, or what was at Bath and Body Works or limited to, were like the department store had like a Clinique counter and an Estee Lauder counter. Like that wasn't for me, and I wasn't interested in it.
Yeah. This brings me back to a conversation we're having kind of at the beginning of this, of like, it's all marketing, and like Gen Alpha will be more like sophisticated about marketing. And I'm thinking of like myself in high school being insufferable and being like, oh, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl ads. I would never watch the Super Bowl, but I'm going to watch the ads because like, I need to know that. And that's cool to know about the ads. But now it's like, I mean, when we're talking about these kids being marketed to like so aggressively and so early and so thoroughly, like, is it then just like them kind of having to hopefully naturally understand this? Or is it like English 101 in college becomes marketing 101 and everyone takes, I don't know, I'm just kind of riffing here, but like, how is it just then that like it becomes the natural mode to do marketing, and that's just kind of like a language that kids speak?
So I think it was Ryan Broderick just wrote about, I think it was him, a big piece on Roblox for New York Mag. And he talked about how he cited some crazy statistic, or it was maybe an executive quote, about how few kids understand that they're being marketed to on Roblox. Like these are all brand, you know, brands are buying out placements or whatever. So few of them actually knew that that was the case. And so that's what gets a little scary, because you kind of assume that because they're such shrewd consumers.
Sam Biddle. It was Sam Biddle, just for the record.
Oh, Sam Biddle. Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Because they're such shrewd consumers, you kind of think that they would understand that, you know, this is a brand sponsorship that I am being advertised to. But the statistic in there is shocking. And so then it really makes you think, okay, if, you know, I mean, literacy,
they don't have media literacy.
Yeah.
What's that?
They don't have media literacy, or there's like holes in it. Cause even that like trip of people commenting like marketing, it's like, well, I think you actually mean creative direction. Like in these larger campaigns or agencies, like paid marketing, organic marketing, social, creative direction, like these are actually all separate functions. And the person who came up with the idea is not the person who decided how it would be disseminated on TikTok. And I almost think like just commenting marketing under something is kind of like the new version of saying like, give the social media intern a raise.
Yeah.
And there's something like weird about it where it's like people who don't have a lot of subject matter domain expertise or media literacy still feel like they're participating in the conversation because it's on their feed and they have an opinion about it, but they have big holes in their understanding of how that thing came to be made.
I'm also thinking
hilarious
about like my, oh, go ahead.
Well, just imagining all the girls commenting marketing, like give me the definition of paid marketing. It's boring as hell. Like you are not into marketing.
They definitely don't know. I'm thinking though of like my dad, I remember telling me once in when I was a teenager and I like wanted to buy some shirt and he was like, you know, he was born in like the mid 50s, right? So in like the late 60s, early 70s, he said he was like, I knew I would never wear a shirt with a logo on it because like they're giving that away because they want me to be a walking billboard. I'm not going to be a walking billboard. And like this like boomer from rural Germany versus like these kids now who are like doing Sephora hauls when they're 70.
Yeah, not only will I take a free logo shirt, I'll pay a premium for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's very
I'll pay you to be your billboard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good place to stop.
Yeah, it's a great place to stop.
If you want to be a billboard for Tasteland, get in touch.
Iggy Pop, I want to be your billboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Casey, thank you for coming on again.
Thank you, Casey.
Thank you guys so
much. Good to see you.